Welcome, welcome, welcome back to another episode of Kathleen McGee's Hot Mess. Last week there was no episode because I did an episode with Adam, and then I don't know how, but I deleted it. So I was really pissed, and I didn't have a backup. So I took a week off. So sue me. We'll get one with Adam again in the future. But yeah, it is now a week until Christmas, and by, you know, you can listen to this podcast now as you're doing all your the crap you have to do, and Hanukkah too, and whatever else everyone else celebrates. I feel like we celebrate a lot of shit as humans, so the best part about this kind of stuff is I get to go see my nephew and my brother and my sister-in-law, my mom and my dad and stepmom, all these people and I only see periodically throughout the year, so I'm excited. I'm getting on a plane tonight and heading to Edmonton, where I'm going to hang out there for a week, and praise Jesus, it is not cold the week that I'm there. It is it was like minus 37 degrees Celsius with the wind chill last night, but it won't be that tonight, I've been assured, because it's only been minus 10 in Vancouver, and I've been freezing my buns off. I've lost all of my ability to be in cold weather, but I don't know, Vancouver's a different kind of cold. It's a wet cold. Alberta's a dry cold. It's easier to handle. What did I do this week? I just got ready for Christmas. I went to the Christmas market in Vancouver. It's like this German Christmas market. That was really fun, and I don't know, I've just been hanging out, trying to book myself for the new year, get myself out there. I've got dates coming up in Saskatchewan. I'll be back in Saskatoon. And, oh my God, you guys, I'm going to sneeze. Sorry. I didn't mean to sneeze in your ears. Anyway, I got a date in Saskatoon. That'll be happening in April. I've got some stuff. I'll be doing Laugh Lines in New West. Hopefully some stuff on Vancouver Island. Again, I'm open to anything. If you want me to come to your city and I can legally be there, let me know. I'll make it work. Hopefully we'll have something in Regina. And I do have a show in Prince Albert. All those dates are coming. And this week on the podcast, okay, the lady that's on the podcast this week is, she's like a natural antidepressant. I think that she actually goes, that's in her bio. And she really is. And I feel like almost every time we hang out, I have a bit of a therapy session with her. So this podcast is a bit of a therapy session. I, of course, cry. You guys, it wouldn't be Kathleen McGee's Hot Mess if I didn't start crying about something. But she's just like a ball of positivity. Her name is Lori Gibbs. She's a Calgary comic. She started when she was 40. And we talk about like how hard it is to start when you're older. And I really loved this episode because I think that a lot of people are going to be able to relate to the things that we've talked about. We talk about being lonely at Christmas. We talk about having rough years, finding something other than comedy to make your life happy and fulfilled, because if you just immerse yourself in comedy, it's gonna destroy you. But I love Lori Gibbs. She's just so awesome and so funny, and it was so awesome having her on. It cut out right at the end. I panicked because I thought that if my battery dies, it erases the whole episode. I was like so panicked because this is a really fun episode. Well, it's really fun and great, and it didn't erase. It just cut off before we were able to say that we were both doing New Year's Eve shows. I will be at Yuck Yucks Vancouver on January 30th. I'll be headlining. That's the Friday. And then on January 31st, I'm going to be hosting for Daryl Lennox. He's incredible. Chris Griffin will be there. I'm so excited. And then in Calgary, Lucky Duck Lori Gibbs is hosting for podcast guest and one of my favorite human beings, Sean LeConver. So if you're in Calgary or Vancouver, come to New Year's Eve with us. We will have a very good time. Lori Gibbs, look up I think we cut off where you can find her. So go look up Lori, lorigibbs.ca. She's she's a speaker, she's a stand-up comedian, she's a crafty bitch. in a crafty way. Like, she makes awesome crafts. I've never met anybody that just doesn't love her, because she's just like a positive ball of energy. And yeah, I had a really awesome conversation with her. So hopefully this doesn't depress anybody, or maybe it'll make people think about their situations. I don't know. But I really enjoyed this episode. Thank you as always for listening. Next week I'm going to do a different podcast if I can get it done. Fingers crossed I can do this. So hopefully that will happen. But have fun getting ready for Christmas and all your holidays, and have fun with your family and your friends and your office parties. I love you guys. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Kwanzaa. What else is there? I don't know. Just have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Yeah, I didn't do anything for Halloween this year, except for I handed out candy for the first time in forever in this house.
Did you love it?
I had so much fun.
Isn't it great?
It was so fun. Like, this cutest little Asian boy dressed up as Nemo came to the door. Oh. And I gave him candy, and then his dad goes, "Say thank you," and he bowed.
No, he did not.
So then I gave him like 6 more chocolate bars.
Yes, you're just confirming that message of manners will get you everywhere.
Manners
in this
and
life.
Cuteness.
Oh,
I've used people. I use my cuteness. You use your cuteness.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any cuteness. I don't know what you mean. But yes, I tell my boys that all the time. I'm like, I know it seems like a little thing, but if you have good manners, you would be amazed at how much further you get in the world. Because people don't expect it from millennials.
No, especially millennials. Because you have millennials. You raised millennials, but your millennials aren't shitty.
I don't I've think met both they of are. Them.
I met one of your... Dylan? Was that the one I met at the bar? Yes. I met Dylan. Am I allowed to use his name on the podcast? Or will...
Absolutely. He's Dylan cool. Michael Gibson. He's amazing.
And he's a musician.
Yes, he is.
And he was at a show that I was at my favorite bar in Calgary, the Ship and Anchor. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Are you Laurie Gibson?" He was... I think we did a shot together.
Oh, I'm so pretty sure. I would want nothing we did a less shot. Than that.
I love that you've like raised kids that are just like cool, but not shitheads.
Yeah. And they're not afraid of strangers.
Yeah.
Like, my mom did the opposite of what you're supposed to do. Like, she didn't teach me not to talk to strangers. She kind of role modeled that you should talk to all the strangers. And she just brought, like, a smile or a little bit of sparkle into their day. And that's how I ended up being, just because that's what I thought was normal.
Yeah.
So with my kids, like, I never wanted that little kid who like hid behind his mother and was like, "Oh, I'm not supposed to talk to you." No, we're all in this world together. Just be sweet. Okay.
I think that's one of the things is, I don't know what happened to the parents of millennials, but I don't know if they were scared for their kids the entire time or what happened. Cause my mom was the same way. She always wanted me to be outgoing. Like, she used to work for Alberta Culture, and she would do trade shows where she would just have a booth with all the museums in Alberta. And it was just like, "You come and see all the museums in Alberta." And I would dress up as a little pioneer kid and hand out brochures and stuff. Like,
my heart.
I was in a brochure once.
Oh my gosh. You were probably the highlight of that booth. And I would venture to say that you felt so incredibly important in that role.
I did.
Yes.
And I think that's what a lot of parents stopped doing, is they made them, like, they just sheltered and protected so much. Like, I know kids with the booze, with the whole booze thing.
Yeah.
My mom always said, if you're going to drink, drink at home. Don't go drink in a bush. Mm. If you really have to drink, you tell me and you drink at home. And she would come and pick us up at the bar. Mm-hmm. Me and my girlfriends, we were 18. She's like, "No one gets in a car drunk. No one." I would call my mom at 3 a.m. and my mom would wake up, get, and never complain. Mm-hmm. And always say, "I'm proud of you."
Yes.
And I think that it's just like, if you treat your children like miniature adults, they're going to grow up to be amazing adults. And I think that's what you do with your kids.
You've got it right on the button. Like, you always maintain their dignity and you respect them. Like, just because they're children, that doesn't mean they don't deserve your respect, right? So that's why I've never been the mom to like purposely embarrass my kids in front of other people.
I mean, my mom did that. She used to call the school on my birthday in junior high and say, happy birthday from your mommy on the morning announcements.
No, that's kind of amazing.
It's amazing.
But like, I mean, like in puberty, like I would, I have a bit where I say like, I never wanted to be the mom who pointed out the changes in puberty. Like, oh, look, your shoulders are filling out. Do you have pubes yet? And it's like, no, ugh, it's hard enough. You don't need that. But as long as like you teach them, but you never take away their dignity, then they grow up treating other people that way as well, right? Yeah. So it amazes me how chill and laid back they are and how they always like stick up for the underdog in a situation. Like when they're kind or empathetic to somebody, my heart just explodes.
You feel so proud of them.
Oh my God. Like, you know, you can learn a lot of things in life. You can learn how to do a job or a trade or whatever, but you can't learn those values.
Yeah.
That you have to be brought up with them. So when I see it, like, oh my God, all those seeds I planted when you were three and I wasn't sure if they were getting into your thick skull because I wanted to kill you when you were three. You were terrible when you were three.
Yeah.
And then you see them as adults and go, oh my God, they took root. I'm so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so amazing. Yeah. You just, I think that parents that have a good sense of humor always raise good children.
Oh God. I couldn't imagine parenting without a good sense of humor.
That being strict and being angry at your kids all the time and scaring them into being good. Mm-mm. It sounds like having Catholic parents.
I know.
Your parents religious?
No, not at all.
Yeah, neither am I. I found out the cool people had parents that weren't religious. Like my mom always said, if you want to go to church, I'll take you. If you want to go to a synagogue, I'll take you.
Yeah.
I'll show you. She always was never religious. Like her mom died when she was very young. And I think that really affected her.
Right.
Because she's the youngest of all of her sisters. And I think that hit her hard because two of her sisters were very religious.
Yeah.
And then one isn't either. But I think that when my mom was so little and her mom died, I think when you're that young, that the concept of God kind of makes you angry. That if your mom gets taken, what kind of a person would take my mom away from me?
You could easily blame that on this God person. Yeah.
I could totally see that. So I think that's why my mom and I, as much as like my mom and I don't get along all the time, I'm very much like my mother. Like,
yeah. Oh my God. It's scary. There's no denying it.
Have you had those moments?
Oh my God. She gave me a mug when I was in my 20s that says, it's official. I've become my mother. I still have the mug and I can't believe that the older I get, the more I'm like her. Like exactly. And it's, you'll find out. How old are you now?
35.
Okay, you're 35. When I was 35, my mom and I could handle a visit of about 3 days before we had a blowout.
Yeah. That's me and my mom all the time.
Right?
Yeah.
And we were just talking cause I played Abbotsford Jux last weekend and she lives there. So I stay with her when I'm there and we could be roommates now.
Yeah.
You get past that whole thing, right? It's quite beautiful. Like I get up, I grab a coffee and then I scramble up into her bed with her.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. And she's on her iPad and I'm on my phone and we're like honestly showing each other cat videos and giggling.
My God.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
That is very cool. I'm not there yet with my mom. I think that we maybe will get there.
I think you will.
Yeah.
I think
yeah. It'll happen. You never know. Yeah. I don't even know, like, it's weird that, like, because I don't know if I'm ever going to be a mom.
Right.
I will be a cat or dog mom, 100%.
For sure. But, and like, you'll be great at it.
Yeah. And I don't, like, maybe I'll be a mom still, but it just all depends. I'm very selfish and I need to have a lot of money to raise a child.
You know, I'm glad that you know these things about yourself.
Oh, yeah. Well, because I went and got my nails done the other day and I didn't have enough money to do it, but I did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, can you imagine if we have children? And then you're like, how come we didn't buy diapers for the babies? I'm like, nails. Are you kidding me?
Look at these babies. They're gorgeous.
The kid can shit in a garbage bag. I don't care.
You know what? We can craft some diapers. You don't have to get store-bought every time.
You're a craft queen.
I am so.
You're starting a little empire of comedy and crafting. Have you like done workshops?
I don't do workshops. I might though. Like I've been really tempted.
Make money, by the way.
I was tempted to like invite a bunch of ladies. Like, do you know about paint night?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, paint night. In case anyone doesn't know, they encourage going to a bar, drinking, and painting at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's a leader who there's a painting. You pick which night you want to go, which painting you want, and they teach you how to do it. And of course, everybody's turns out a little bit different, which as it should be. But you have fun and you're creative. And I thought I could do something like that. I think part of the reason I haven't is because I'm a bit lazy.
That's the reason I don't do anything
it
either.
It would take a lot of work, right? Because I mean, even just all the supplies.
Yeah.
And then you've got to figure out a craft that's going to have enough general appeal, and it's going to be kind of the right level of difficulty that you don't want to frustrate people, yeah. but you don't want to bore them either. The drinking part, I think, would be the easiest.
That would be the easiest part.
Sure.
But your crafts are so funny, too. Like the one that you made for Christmas, the 2016 dumpster fire ornament. That's the funniest.
Thank you. I cannot take full credit for it. It was, I want to say for the record, it was a woman named Jennifer Brooks, who's a reporter in Minneapolis. She made it. I was inspired to make my own.
That's so amazing.
And what I never thought, Kathleen, was that, okay, here are these two passions I have, being a comedian and doing crafts. In what world would you ever think that those two things would get mashed together? And
yeah,
and they did. Like, the universe is a weird place, right? So there I am on Global and CTV doing crafts, and they don't care what I do. They don't,
yeah.
they don't vet it first. They don't check with me. They're just like, yeah, just come on.
It's very cool. I find that, like, is it morning?
Mm-hmm.
Morning TV loves comedians because I used to always do. Do you know who Ryan Jesperson is? He's on 630 Ched. And is that it?
I know that name, and I remember watching you.
Yeah, he did a podcast. He did one of these episodes, but I would always go on, and he would always have me on, mm-hmm. and then he'd be like, "But you gotta have something. You gotta do something. Let's do something fun because I don't want to just sit and interview you. If I'm gonna have someone like you on, I want to have something fun." And so one time he had me come on, and I was promoting, I think, my album taping, and he told me to come, and I said I'm going to come on with a hangover cure.
Yes.
And I came on, and I brought like a bunch. I just went to No Frills and bought a bunch of stuff. Like, I bought peanut butter and fluff and like pickle juice and like all this. It was disgusting. And so we were making this thing on air, and he was interviewing me while I was making it, and I swore once. And I had the best time ever, and then I made him drink with me after, and it was like, it had like literally like coffee, Tabasco sauce, fluff, Oreos, an egg. And so I'm like, okay, we're doing this at cottage cheese. So we drank it. I've never come so close to vomiting on a television.
You didn't vomit?
Almost.
That's like, you're a hero for not vomiting.
It's on, if you Google Kathleen McGee breakfast television, it's online. It's my favorite thing. I think I just want to use that to promote everything because it was so
right?
funny.
I will Google that because I'm in a hotel room for the next 2 days, so that's what I live for.
Yeah, yeah.
That is so weird, the things that it leads to. Like, when you say that's what you would use for promotion, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so get this. I did golf crafts. I didn't know that existed, but the people at Global said, will you come down to the Shaw Open Golf Classic and do a segment with us? And I was like, yeah, of course. Did you mean crafts? And they go, yeah, golf crafts. And I went, oh yeah, absolutely. Then I went, what the hell are they talking about? So I made golf crafts.
And what did you make?
Well, the first one was a putting device that you could use at home. So you would take a heat register off your floor, so the hole is there, and then I made this thing made of cardboard that fit in that hole with a circle cut out in the middle and then a cup taped in so you could practice your putting.
That's like genius.
Right? It's not bad. And there is a real product that's based off of. And then, like, of course, people are like, so you set the house on fire. I'm like, absolutely, yes. Who cares?
Don't do it in the winter, you idiot.
Yeah, like, come on, take it out after. And then the second one, I hot glued a bunch of golf tees together in the shape of a tree, glittered the hell out of it, and then, like, put it around the anchorman's neck. And he's super stodgy, like, on air. So he was like, you better not get glitter on me. It was, like, all over his nose. It was so satisfying. And then the third one, I had run out of actual craft ideas, so I made golf themed jello shots, and it was green for the grass. It was made with marshmallow vodka, the golf ball was made out of a tiny marshmallow.
Oh my god.
Had a little flag in it with scrapbook paper, and he did not want to take a jello shot with me, and therein lay the comedy. So I'm trying to make him do it. He's trying not to. He's laughing. I'm laughing.
Was this on air?
It was on air. This thing, I put up a comedy video. It's got like 7 views in 10 years. This thing got 10,000 views in 2 days, right?
It's hilarious.
Because it was so much fun. And then at the time, sort of just, sorry, my mind is going everywhere. I was trying to get into being like a comedic keynote speaker.
Yeah.
A woman happens to be watching that clip emails me the same day and goes, would you like to be the speaker for our women's conference?
Oh my God.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, how do you go from Jello shots to, you know, Women's Wellness Day speaker? But she did, God love her.
Oh my God.
I know.
That's the power of, that's why social media is a good thing in comedy. I know, like, there are people that got writing jobs when Twitter was first starting. Mm-hmm. A lot of the writers for, I think it was The Office or Parks and Rec somewhere, a lot of them, they just found them on Twitter and they're like, this person's really funny, let's get this person in. And it's just, and I tell all comics, I'm like, get on Twitter. And they're like, but nobody follows me, it's boring. I'm like, just keep tweeting. It's like a live joke book. Eventually, you'll get a good one and someone will tweet. It just, it will grow. But I use Twitter like it's a live joke book.
Yes. You must know Kelly Oxford, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The queen of Twitter. She came to a conference in Calgary last year that I was emceeing. And basically, that's exactly how she started. And now she's writing for TV shows.
She has books.
She has a book. She, the funniest thing she said in her interview was that you'd be amazed how rich you can get off writing TV shows that never get picked up.
I bet. Just pilots.
Yes.
I wrote a pilot that, and I officially got the word that it will never happen. I found out last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I made money off of just writing that one. And really? It wasn't even a full episode. I just wrote the whole ideas for all of the episodes. And then we wrote one scene. And we got paid to do that. And I'm like, oh.
That's crazy.
So I can still use this idea down the road. Like, I still have this in the back of my mind. Like, I've been generating ideas and just thinking, I'm just going to start writing.
Yes.
I have an idea I'm not going to tell you on air because I feel like either someone's already doing it or someone is going to steal it from me. But I'll tell you off air what it is. This is pretty funny.
Fair enough. And then I'll tweet it later.
Yeah, tweet it later.
And then someone will see my tweet and they'll hire me and then I'll write a pilot.
I've been Googling it because I feel like somebody might have already been pitching this or something, but I just think it's a good idea.
Anyway. You know what? I say go with your gut. Don't
just do it.
Don't worry about what anyone else is doing.
Yeah.
That's in your heart. You're excited about it. So you do it.
Yeah.
It can't be exactly the same as what someone else did.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
It's got your Kathleen McGee spin on it. Nobody else can do a Kathleen McGee spin except Kathleen McGee.
That's right.
So you do it. You own it.
I love you.
I love you more.
You're one of the most positive people too.
Oh, isn't
you ever
that gross?
Get down? That you let people know. Never. Because I always get down and then I let everyone know.
Mm. I'm pretty pretty close to the vest about when I'm down, to be honest with you. Yeah, I have dealt with like three serious bouts of depression.
Yeah.
And postpartum anxiety after Josh. And I do feel it. I think it has, for me anyway, maybe you too, and maybe other comedians listening might agree. There's a weird dichotomy in comedy that there, when you're out doing comedy, you're surrounded by people and
yeah.
other comedians and audiences, and there's adulation and there's excitement and there's a show. And then you can go for days being alone.
Yeah.
And having absolutely none of that. And I think that is quite hard on the system.
I agree. It's a huge, because comedy, when you have a great show, it's a huge high. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you don't even have a great show, it's still a big high.
Yeah.
And like, I will notice that I get most depressed when I'm not working very much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, I get A, frustrated with my career because I'm like, I'm good enough. Why am I not working every weekend?
Mm-hmm.
But then it just doesn't happen. And then I get really, really depressed and I get angry and then I lash out.
Mm-hmm.
I start saying shit. And then I start working again. I'm like, oh, okay, it's back.
Yes.
I'm fine.
And let's not forget that you and I are clearly both addicted to social media.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're looking at everyone else's posts.
Oh.
Which, let's take a grain of salt with that, because who's posting like, hey guys, don't have any gigs this weekend?
I do.
Well, you do, because like, you're honest. But most people are presenting what they want the world to see.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, this person got another great gig and they're doing a soft seat theater and they're doing this and I'm sitting at home. Meanwhile, that person is like cutting their inner thighs with a razor blade and they're like not telling anybody, right?
Yeah.
And they're not living their passion and they're unhappy and they're going through a terrible spell, but you would never know that. So you just have to go, well, you know what? The truth is probably that we all feel quite similarly.
Yeah.
In this strange, strange business that we do, right? And you just, you have to block out all that other crap.
It's totally true.
But it takes energy.
A lot of energy. Well, I was talking to someone we both love dearly, Sean the Conqueror.
I knew you were going to say Sean.
And I talk to him all. He's like my number one person I go to when I'm pissed off about something, or he'll see me I'll post something and he'll just send me a text and he goes, I know exactly what that's about.
Oh, it's so comforting.
He's a great person.
What a good friend.
And what he said was that he was like, everybody, especially me, it should have to take 1 week a month off of social media because it's what you do. Like, you just sit and read it all day. And, oh, look. Oh, Halifax is announcing all of their festival people. Guess who didn't get? I'm never getting Halifax. They don't like me. I'm too dirty.
I don't think I'm going to get them ever either.
Guess what, though? I don't fucking want it. If you want me to be this squeaky clean, boring ass person that I'm not, then fuck you. I don't want to do your stupid rinky-dink festival.
is that what they're looking for?
I remember when I asked, I don't know if it's the same person, but when I had my LA management, I even had them email them because I thought it would look better. And they sent them a message back that said, I'll never forget this. And I think even if I got offered Halifax, I might not do because I'm still extremely hurt by it, way they did it. They just sent me this message. And I should probably just suck it up and be like, get over it. But it really bothered me because they said, we think Kathleen is great and she's very funny, but she's much, much, much too dirty for this festival. And then they typed out, aw. And it just,
what?
Yeah, I was like, you, fuck you.
Ah, what was the aw about?
I don't know. It was really condescending. And I was like, oh, so you think I'm not good enough for your festival? I think you're not good enough for me.
Well,
know what I mean?
And let me stop you for a second because they didn't say you're not good enough for our festival.
I know,
so
they said
I'm going to correct you on that right now and just preserve that little pocket of self-esteem.
Yeah.
They didn't say you're not good enough. They said that you weren't the fit, basically.
Yeah. Which I'm fine with. And this is the reason I don't do corporates when people, like, unless I say, just so you know, I'm being myself, I'm being my club comic.
Yes.
And if not, I'm not doing it. There's not a lot of comics that will say that.
Dude, the minute I started saying to people, the first criteria for hiring me is, can I be myself?
Hey, I'm not changing. I'm not.
I began to feel so much better about everything.
It's so much better. And this is what I've been working for. Like, I think I've said this on this podcast a million times. When I first started, I started in Alberta, just like you.
Yep.
And I was filthy. Like, people think I'm dirty now. I was disgusting. Like, I'm embarrassed by some of the shit that I used to say. And a bunch of the older corporate guys would be like, you better clean it up. You can't say cunt on stage. You can't say this and that. They're never going to work you. And even like the bookers were not interested because I was too dirty and I couldn't make the money. But every time someone said that to me, I'm like, but I didn't get into stand-up comedy to be an actress and fake it.
Exactly.
I got into stand-up comedy because I'm funny as Kathleen and I want to be myself. So I want to work towards the point where I'm not getting booked on a corporate because people are like, we just want some comedian at a Christmas party. We're not going to pay attention to them.
Yep.
We want Kathleen McGee at our Christmas party because we're fans. And that's has started happening.
Absolutely.
Small,
it has. Obviously. You've got like a cult following and I'm so glad.
It starts to happen slowly if you fucking hold out. But if you just.
Yep.
I get so frustrated with corporate comics because it's the season where they just bitch and moan about their corporates on thing. I said, okay, you can bitch and moan, but please put your bank statement up. Please show me that you just made a couple of grand.
Yes.
Doing nothing.
It, you know, it makes me feel so good about my decision to say no to 98% of corporates.
Yes.
When I see somebody post a picture of the room that they're about to do a corporate in.
Yeah.
Because I look at the room and I honestly get flashbacks of that sick feeling.
Yes.
That you had when you'd walk into the corporate and you're like this weirdo. Everyone knows each other. And then you walk in and they're all judging you before you even got on stage. And the layout is horrible and it's 10 in the morning. And I think to myself, you know, I just can't. The paycheck isn't that important.
Yeah.
That because that feeling that you have
it's
before,
awful.
During, and after, like it permeates your soul for a while.
Yeah.
And it's like you feel like you need like a Silkwood shower after to feel like yourself.
Like a bunch of comics were talking about, what do you do after a corporate? Do you say goodbye after you're done or blah, 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 blah. Mm. And I did my very first quote unquote corporate that Yuck Yucks has ever gotten me in my entire career with Yuck Yucks last Saturday. And it was for Molson Canada. It was perfect.
Sounds like a good match.
It was perfect.
Yes.
Finally, like, I mean, it's not impossible for me to get a corporate. You just got to put me with the right people.
Yes. Not all corporates have to be horrible.
Yes. And they can be fun. And yeah. I sat and I ate dinner with the contact and all their friends and we had a great time. I got up. Like, I've never done this before. I thought, this is weird. I'm sitting there eating and then getting on. Went up. I did my spot. It was fun. I had a good time. It was weird because the setup was weird, but that's just a corporate part of it. And then I stayed after and I did like shots out of their shot luge and I got chugged beers with them.
Just
and
back up for a second. I've never heard the phrase shot luge.
Haven't you ever seen one of those like ice sculptures with like straws in them and you pour a shot down them and you...
You know, I live at Michael's and... elementary school parking lots with the other moms, right? Well, I've never seen a shot luge at the Deer Run Elementary School.
If I ever get married, you will be invited and there will be a,
oh my God,
a shot
thank
luge.
You. Can I get a guest spot at your wedding?
Yes, you can MC. You and Sean can
MC
together. No,
Sean's going to have the MC spot. I know my place. Okay, but maybe just like a quick guest spot on
absolutely.
The dance floor.
Absolutely. I'll just have an open mic while everyone's eating.
Just all night. And you'll have the worst setup ever. You'll have the highest ceilings, the biggest dance floor. You'll have the mic on a podium all twisted around.
All the older relatives all up front. Yes. But I had so much fun with this corporate. Like,
good.
I got drunk with them and they had fun with me. And all these people came up after. They're going to come see me at other shows. Mm. And I thought, I'm like, why would you just get up and leave right after? Like, take the money and run. Like, I feel bad for those comics. That don't even have a good time.
Yeah.
That have stopped having fun because they just want the money. And that's basically what it is.
And, God.
But the same thing with, like, if I showed up and it was a bunch of people I didn't want to hang with. Yeah, of course. Like, yes. I've had shows at clubs where I'm like, I don't want to hang out with you people
you
after.
You can feel the vibe, whether yeah. it's cool or not, to hang out afterwards.
But yeah, it just seems so, like, don't die on the inside doing comedy because then you'll just stop. Because I've had a lot of struggles this year with, like, comedy. With, like, do I love it enough to keep doing this? Because I have, it's. It hasn't gotten any better.
And you have to make that decision. Like I try to always remember what was that fire in my belly about at the beginning. And it was always about seeing the joy come out of the faces of strangers, which then just was like throwing gas on my joy fire. And
I love that. My joy fire.
It's like a shot luge, but it's a joy fire. These are shots that you can order in any bar in Alberta now.
Oh, I love it.
But I thought, if I'm willingly taking a gig where I know that the chances of a joy fire are like 1%, why? Why?
Why would I want to drive a couple hours? But it's not worth it at all.
What it's about.
And I get it's a money thing, but clearly, look at me. I'm not making that much money. I'm still making it. I'm still getting by. It's extremely stressful.
Yeah.
I don't get to like.
But you get to be true to yourself and go to bed at night going, you know what? I feel good about Kathleen.
Yeah. I will always be me. I don't want to change.
In your sleeping bag under the bridge.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's going to come to. That's what's going to come
to. You know, and I could be saying a very different bunch of words if I was a comedian in my 20s.
That's the thing I want to talk to you about because you started, how old were you when you started?
40.
And I'm going to say that it's extremely rare for a comic to start later in their life and be there 10 years later. You're like 10 years now at least, right?
11.
Yeah, because I'm 12 this year and then so yeah, I was a year right before you.
We were comedy born very similar
yes,
times.
We were. And I think that it's like so amazing that you, because I bet you, I don't know what the feelings would have been like when you were, if you're 40 and you come in and like all these like, because most people start in their 20s.
Sure.
And so there's all these like kids in their 20s, like who's this person coming in here? Oh, you're going to try. There's another person in Toronto that I don't know if this would embarrass him, but Todd Graham. Do you know Todd Graham?
I don't.
He's fucking hilarious. He's one of my favorite comedians in Canada. He started when I was living there, but he wasn't really that hard into it, but he's older. Like, I don't know how old he is, but he's definitely in his 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, I always think it's just, I'm so impressed that like you stuck it out and stuck around and told people to shove it when you had to.
It's so weird though. Like in this case, ignorance truly is bliss because when you get into comedy, you don't know anything, right? Like all I knew, all that I could focus on was how scared I was and that I knew I would regret it if I didn't try it. So I had to try it. And now that I look back and I, you know, in my 11 years, I've seen older people try to start comedy.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is rare for that person to stick around. So I'm guessing that when I started, people might have thought, oh, here we go again. Middle-aged woman saw Oprah and decided to follow her passion. And okay, she's going to be gone in 4 months, but whatever. Let's just be okay to her because she seems needy and friendly. I think that I felt that,
but only as a woman. Because I was the only girl in Edmonton. There was one other girl that was kind of doing it, but she wouldn't hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only girl, and I remember thinking, first, Kathleen, do not hook up with any of these guys.
No.
Because I don't want them to think I'm here to have sex with them. I want them to take me seriously.
Yep.
And it took like 3 or 4 months before they actually started talking to me, before they started like being my friends. Because like, you know, some of them might be like, oh, this girl's just here to fuck us. Like, because that's just kind of
what it
was like 10 years ago or more. I mean, it's now everyone has a safe space and girls cry when they don't feel included, which fucking pisses me the fuck off. I'm so tired.
Say more about that. What do you mean?
I'm tired of girls whining that they're not getting spots.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, the reason you're not getting spots is because you, like, some places, yeah, some places, they don't, they aren't inclusive to women.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls before you sat around and pushed their fucking and worked their asses off to be included.
Mm-hmm.
I would even say, and I don't know if I'll get in trouble, but at this point, I don't care. I don't think Yuck Yucks is kind to women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they, I just don't think, it's not kind, maybe not be the right word, but I don't think that they make it encourage women to be in their business.
Okay.
I get that feeling in some places, not everywhere.
Yep. But I don't feel
not
that,
from the clubs.
No. I think when I'm thinking of places that are particularly inclusive of women, I think of the Winnipeg Festival.
Yeah.
But I really am having a hard time thinking of another. But, you know, it's kind of, I feel weird saying it because if you work hard enough and you try hard enough and you're funny enough, you will eventually get the attention.
You will.
But you're right. You can't sit there and cry and whine about it.
And be like, look at, here's a list of 100 girls that are, that they should be booking on shows. I remember when that happened in Toronto. I didn't even see it. I just heard about it. And then Rebecca Kohler spoke out on it as a woman and said, you can't tell me that all of these girls are able to middle or MC. You can't tell
me
that.
Good for her.
And then the girls jumped on her.
Aww.
But it's like, no, be fucking honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Stop saying that you're not getting spots because you're a woman and start looking at your material and your performances. Are
exactly.
you getting laughs?
Yes. It's and everybody in their own, you know, lonely, deep, insecure time, it's very easy to look outward and say, well, I'm not getting that because, you know, I could say, oh, well, I'm 51 and they think I'm not going to be around anyway.
Stop making excuses for yourself.
But you just can't go through it with that attitude. You just have to kind of put your blinders on and go, you know what? I'm just going to keep working hard and I'm just going to keep polishing these bits and I'm going to keep doing this. And God, you're the only one that's the best at being you.
Yes.
So like, don't try to write to fit in somewhere that you want on your bucket list. Just write who you are. Nobody else is as good at being you as you are.
And do the writing yourself, because that's the thing, is like, find out who you are. It's gotten so much easier the more and more I'm just me on stage.
Yep.
It's just gotten so much easier to write material
than
it has ever before. And like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't, like, if a guy wants to make an excuse that he's I'm not getting ahead because the girls are getting spots. No, you're not getting ahead because you're not funny. I'll be the person to tell you that.
Yeah,
and if people hate me because of that.
Or don't you find that guys often go with just another single guy in his 20s. There's so many of us, I can't get noticed. Oh, you'll get noticed if
you're
good.
Funny.
Oh, hell yeah, you will.
So this goes with men and women. I don't care. Stop making excuses as to why you're not getting spots and think and look deep and see why you're not getting spots.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
But you know what? If you start doing it, I guarantee you, you're probably going to start getting better too.
Yeah.
Stop looking outward. Start looking inward.
Yeah. But it's even with like me and like Halifax. If I really wanted to do Halifax, I would do the fucking work and write a clean set.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't do it. So I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
But I've made peace with myself for that kind of stuff. There are parts of my life that I'm extremely lazy with, that if I actually worked on it, I probably could get it. And I
But then you're not being true to you.
Yeah, it's true.
And I kind of admire that you would prefer to be true to you.
I just want to be me. I don't want to have to change. Like, I love doing the debaters, but I never feel comfortable at those tapings. I feel so much like an outsider, and I feel really...
When you told me what that comic said to you, would you like to say what that comic said to you?
Yeah, it really... I'm really good friends with him.
I know.
But it really kind of like... That really made this past one that I did really hard to be at, because he said... What are you doing here? There's no fisting debates. And I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah. Just
like, you don't think I have the ability to
just let the silence hang for a second. Okay. Let it hang. You go to a debaters that you've prepared for, that you've spent hours writing for. And someone says, what are you doing here? Is there a fisting debate?
Yeah.
No. Why would you? And you know, I know this person, and I know that...
And I'm not angry about it.
No, but still, do you know what? At a certain age, and I'm going to say 10, you need to have better social skills than that. You have to know that on some level, that is not going to feel good to the person hearing it.
Well, the thing, like, and I talked to Kenny Robinson when I had him on about this, and he goes... I said, well, a lot of comics say shit to me, and I feel like on behalf of Lady Comics, I should be upset and offended. But also, like, I have... been one of the boys for the whole time I've started. Like, I've not been one of those weak flowers. I've never been like extremely feminine around the boy comics, you know what I mean? Like, they're always shocked when I wear a dress on stage or something. It's so stupid. But like, I mean I'm not saying I should expect those comments, and I get why he said it, because I think he thought, oh, I'll think it's hilarious.
Okay, maybe. Which that's a positive way to look at it.
I mean, I've heard fisting jokes that make me die laughing. They're really funny. But it did. But it was more of just like, I already feel uncomfortable at these tapings. Yes. I already feel like I don't belong here. And now, like, I really feel like I don't belong here.
Can I tell you something? I often feel like I don't belong there, too.
I think it's just, and it's not, and this isn't negative stuff about the debaters. It's really fun to tape them. And I always, like, I'm always in awe that they ask me to do it. And it pushes me to write on something that I don't normally write about. But it is sort of like this club of people that always do them, and they're not mean or anything, but it's just like, it's like when you're with regular people and you're used to being around those people, you kind of just attached to each other. And then when you come in and you don't do them every time they tape, or like you do them like once every year, once every 2 years, you do feel like an outsider. So like, yeah, like that, I, at that point I'm like, I felt like saying, this isn't a safe space for me. a safe space.
But you know what? And here, I'm gonna turn the tables on both of us right now. Because, okay, so let's say we now have to look inward and go, okay, what is it that's making you feel like you don't fit in right now? I think part of my issue is that every time I go to a debaters, I think that it's going to feel like summer camp.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to just like romp through the hallways, and we're going to do shots together, and then we're going to make crafts and then go down to the dock and water ski, and it's going to be great. And I kind of have to remember, first of all, that's not everyone's personality. Okay. That's my personality, because I'm a puppy. Not everybody is a puppy. It's nice to see everybody. And I enjoy it, and I like the exercise of writing a debate, and I like, you know, trying to get better each time. I think I'm really all over the map with how well I write them. Yeah. Like, I just haven't quite found the groove yet. I know when I find the groove, I'm very excited, but it's not an easy thing for me. I work really hard on them, and I always feel very challenged by them. So when I have a good one, I'm very proud, but I think maybe I just need to change my expectations.
Yeah.
And realize that it's not a big party. Everybody else is also having their own insecurities and wondering how they're going to do.
Yeah.
And you're often thrown together with a debater that maybe you don't know, and you're not sure how they're going to work with you.
Yeah.
So maybe I just need to like change what I'm thinking, and then I would be more comfortable.
I think so too. And I want to reiterate, it's nobody's mean at these,
tapings. At
all. And everybody is fun. And, I mean, I was lucky I got to do a debate with Paul Meyerhog, and he's like a Sean McComber to me. I love
him. How dare you get like one of your best friends?
It was when I found out who it was.
I got Sean once, so I got it.
It's so great when you're with somebody on those debates that wants it to be funny and not doesn't care if they win or lose.
No, it's not about that. No. It's about making it fun for the audience. Oh my God. Yeah. Come on.
And that's what, like, I did the Facebook debate with Paul, and he was so funny. And I'm like,
I listened to
the whole time. I'm like, he's destroying me. But it was so fun.
No, you were both funny. Shut up.
It was, yeah, but he just, like, the way he did it, and it worked well with us.
He was so ridiculous.
Yeah, Paul is
what did he keep yelling?
Fact! Oh my god, it was so funny.
Yeah, I was like, I can't even imagine. Like, I love the fact that in his head, yelling the word fact louder each time was going to be hilarious. I'm
well,
like,
when he sent me his first draft, and I read through it, I'm like, oh, I like got it this in my mind, because I'm like, Paul is just like old man Paul ranting and raving about the internet and social media.
Yeah.
And I got that in my head. And so then I kind of was like, I used that on my, and I said, I can hear you screaming these things out.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if he was going to do it differently, but it really worked. Like, and
yeah,
that's
maybe
what
you
happens.
Planted the seed.
That's what happens when you talk for your debates, when you, it makes it so much better.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah, it makes it so, all so the debates great. I've ever done, they've all talked to me. We've all compared notes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's always been fun, but I've heard that there are comics that think it's about winning. And it's not. It's about.
It shouldn't have
it's
anything
about doing
to
a fun
do
debate
it.
And getting money from the CBC.
Yeah, whether you win or lose, guess what? Your check's still the same. So.
Yeah, you get a nice hotel room and you get a.
You
oh,
do. You get treated
trip.
Very well.
They treat you so great. Like, and I think that's what, like, I love doing the debaters. But again, like, I just still feel every time I've done it, I feel like first time I was nervous because I'd never done it. Second time I was nervous because it was my second one and I kind of knew what it was like. And then this one I was like, I was calm because of who I was with.
Yeah.
But then when I got there, it was like, that really made me nervous when that guy said that to me.
Yes, I know. Did you tell him?
No, I'm not a con. I don't like conflict. I don't like confrontation. I think you know that about me. There are things in my life that I've just like, shit has happened to me and I just push it aside because I'm like, I don't want to bring it up again.
Right.
It doesn't
right,
matter.
Right.
There's no point in bringing this back up again. I don't want to start a drama. I don't want people to think I'm difficult. So it's just like something that I always do.
Right. If you guys were like super close friends, I could see you saying to him, I know that you had no intention of making me feel this way.
Yeah.
But I have to share with you, I did feel this way.
Yeah.
And this is why. And I'm really self-aware about my insecurities. So please don't do that again.
I did that once with Sean.
Yeah.
One time we were all at the comic strip where we would hang out. We were doing, it was like a Monday or Tuesday. And he was hosting or he just went up and he found my joke book, which is, if you're a comic, you know, this is a very sacred thing, right?
Dear God, yes.
Even your best friend shouldn't be looking
at
it. So he took my joke book on stage and then he goes, I found Kathleen's joke book. And then he just made this motion of rip, like he was ripping in front of people. And I don't know why, but I almost started crying. It hurt my feelings much because I think it's because I love and respect him. I think he's so funny. I don't want him to think I'm not funny
or
anything like that. And he totally meant it as a joke.
Of course.
And it was a rib. I can be sensitive.
Yes. You know what I always ask myself when I'm feeling sensitive or hurt? I ask myself, did that person have an intent to hurt me?
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10,
they didn't.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And that's what I would want people to know if they thought that I hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to give me the benefit of the doubt. We're friends. Why would I ever want to inflict pain on you?
And I say shit to people all the time. I'm the meanest to the people I love the most.
Oh my God, yes. Can I tell you what oh my God. At Yak Yaks last night, I'm working with Alex Sparling.
Okay, he is a gem. He did this podcast early on. He's the guy that lost the eye and I left him on my back deck to the story.
Yes, you told me that. You're like, oh, by the way, I'm going to go inside for a minute. Tell the story about losing your eye. Bye.
Which is the most horrifying story of his life. But
oh, my God.
He's an angel.
He is. And I met him at Calgary Yuck Yucks for 4 minutes, I swear. And Angie in Calgary had already said, you and Alex are going to be best friends. Just thought you should know. So I still hadn't worked with him until last night. And he was telling me outside that he has this bit about how his mom wants him to get a job for differently abled people. and he's like, so you want me to sign up as a retard? And I said to him, I want you to know that I'm probably going to talk about my son who has autism later. So I just want you to know, like, I'm not going to feel bad about any of the stuff you're saying. He's like, no, because the way I say it is, his mom's like, I would probably use different language, Alex. Right? So this is how you know you're immediate friends with somebody. I'm on stage. He's done his joke about, you know, saying that she wants him to sign up as a retard. And then I do my bit about I have a son with autism. And then at some point, I'm not exactly sure how it happened, but it was beautiful and organic. I'm like, Sure, my kid might have autism, but at least he has two eyes, okay? And I can hear Alex, like, gasping.
Oh, his laugh is terrifying. You think he's dying.
And you think that, like, he's having some sort of cardiac issue right now. And I can hear him. And, like, just the fact that I knew he would take it the right way made my heart so happy.
Yeah.
And afterwards, we were both doubled over with it. He's like, please tell me we're doing this all weekend for all the shows. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's going to grow and change and be different each show, but it's happening.
That's so
for
awesome.
Sure.
Oh, my God. That's so amazing. Yeah. I mean, there's a point where, like, you have a sense of humor about yourself, and then there's the point where you're a little sensitive. Who was I talking to about this? Because it was about how I've been told this, like, by male comics, like, you can't be a sensitive girl in this business and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, do you think I want to be a sensitive girl? Do you think that I choose to cry at the drop of a hat or to get my feelings hurt or to lose my mind when a guy that I don't know comments something on my Facebook about fat chicks or something? Do you think that I want to not fly off the hat? Well, of course I don't want to do that. But my fucking brain is genetically this way.
Right.
And I think if more guys, like, understand that sometimes I just can't help it.
Well,
and I try to get control of it, but, like, I do cry easily, and, like, I try my best not to, but it's...
I think that everybody is sensitive and emotional. It's just what they decide to do with it.
Yeah.
That makes us different, because clearly everybody has feelings. But I don't know if it's fair to say that you can't help it.
I can't. I'm challenging
you right now, the positive, sunshiny Lori Gibbs.
To keep my emotions in a little bit more check.
Well, again, I would say look inside you and go, why is that?
Yeah.
Because I've had trollish comments and things on the internet.
They're so hard to, because, like,
they hurt.
And then they say, you're a comedian, you should be able to laugh this off. I'm like,
oh my God,
but
no.
When it happens every day, when I get it almost every day, when someone's trying to be funny, but it's just either extremely sexist or racist or just, like, gross.
Yeah.
You think that I'm supposed to let it just slide off my back? I can't every time. And then I look like a crazy person, because I attack these people online.
Right.
And I look like I'm crazy. Maybe even some of them are listening that I've attacked, and they always say, I'm still a fan, but calm the fuck down. And then I'm like, I'm trying to, but I'm really pissed off right now.
You know what? And that's who you are right now. That's Kathleen McGee right now. And you know what? Maybe that'll be different in a few years. Maybe those edges will be sandpapered off a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's who you are. And you have to love yourself for who you are right now. When I get hateful stuff, God, fuck, it hurts. It hurts
so much.
And there's this feeling I get in the pit of my stomach, and I can't describe it. And you think, why would a stranger take time out of their day to just hurl such hate in the direction of someone that they've never met? They don't know you. You're just another human in the world. Because I try to go out there, and I honestly am just a peace-loving hippie deep down. And I just think, honestly, that kindness and loving everybody will honestly make a difference.
Yeah.
So when I get the exact opposite in my face, it's like, and then I have to go, okay, right, this is not my stuff. It's not my stuff.
Someone is in pain on the inside. They're projecting it out to me.
Do you know my hula hoop analogy?
No.
It's not mine. I didn't make it up. But picture that everybody has a hula hoop around them, okay? And in your hula hoop is everything that makes Kathleen who she is, okay? It's your upbringing, it's your values, it's your talents, it's your beauty, it's your amazingness, and it's what you believe in. And here's the secret. People are going to try to throw shit into your hula hoop that says, Kathleen McGee's whatever.
Yeah.
Kathy McGee's fat. Kathy McGee's not funny. Kathy McGee's meh. The secret is nobody can put anything in your hula hoop except for you.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody does a drive-by shitting on your hula hoop, you're allowed to take that cow pie out of it and go, oh, seems you've left this here by accident. This actually belongs in your hula hoop.
Oh my God. I love it.
It's not bad, right?
That's amazing.
You are the only one who decides what's in your hula hoop.
That's amazing. That's such a great way of thinking about it and putting it.
It's helped me.
Yeah. That is really good, because I get affected by that as well. And I think it's just like a I've held it my entire life. Some things that people say to me, and it's just everybody.
It's totally. Their stuff. That's yeah. that's shit for their hula hoop. Yeah, it's yeah, not yeah. yours to worry about. Don't let it ruin all that great stuff that you've worked so hard for to make your hula hoop the Kathleen McGee shrine that it should be.
Yeah.
You know?
If I ever get my talk show, you're going to be like my what's that? Who is that woman that was with Oprah all the time? Not Gail, but like her. What was that? She was a doctor and she was.
Was it a black or white black lady? Woman. Was it Maya Angelou?
No.
Because I'm not anywhere near Maya.
No, was that, she was like a motivational, you're going to be my person that does that.
Okay. Was it Marianne Williamson? Oh no, she's white.
She has her own show too. God, and she's great. It. And she's just like, she's like, I don't know what her background is, but she's just like a very positive person, a very good thing. And I think that's all you have to do is get more positivity in your life. Like, I just had Alicia Tobin on this podcast.
Yeah, I wish I knew her.
Oh my God. She isn't, you would love her. She's incredible. I feel like having like a lady comic summit in my living room where I just invite the girls that I really think would all click. And I know there's a group of us that will, and it would just be amazing. But Alicia even inspired me. Like, I'm going to start volunteering in the new year. Cause I'm like, I don't do anything for anyone but myself. So she's like, volunteer. So now I'm going to be a foster mom for cats. Like, I'm going to bring them in here. And like, there's this homeless shelter for women I really have a hard time seeing homeless women. Mm-hmm. I get it. There's homeless men too, but it really scares me to see homeless women. Cause I'm like, I don't know. It's just something about a woman being on the streets mm-hmm. because they're so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And mentally ill, and you're around mentally ill men that are scary. Like, it just makes me sick and gross. So there's this one like group here, I can't remember the name, but I think I'm gonna start volunteering or at least donating to them in the new year.
You see, listen to you earlier saying that you're a selfish person, and you know what, it's bullshit.
It's parts of my life. So,
it's
like
part of you, but you know what, I think that is, first of all, the fact that you want to do it says a lot about your heart. I also think that as comics, it's really easy to have a non-well-rounded life.
Yeah.
Because, especially if you're focused solely on comedy for the most part. And I think that is going to just like round out a part of your life that you don't even know was dented in.
Yeah.
And it's going to affect all the other things in your life. I can't wait to see what that does.
Oh, me too.
Oh my God, I could cry.
I think that like 2016 was a weird year. It was a weird year for everybody.
Yeah.
But like the beginning of my year, I had one of my deepest depressions I've ever had in my life. Like,
oh,
I was,
God, I'm so sorry.
So close to killing myself.
Oh,
not even,
honey,
killing.
I'm so sorry.
But I figured it out. And I think that like, and then like the end of the year, I met Adam and he's been amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah. Let it out. Don't even try to stop it. No, don't. I mean, honestly, crying is a detox. So really we're getting a spa treatment.
But I think
that
it is.
No money.
I think that I'm just thinking of this right now, that this podcast is a really good one to come out right now at this time of year, because, oh, Christmas sucks when you're alone.
Oh my God. It's so hard. It's just every reminder is like, oh, the whole rest of the world is having a beautiful turkey with their beautiful family. And it's not
even
true.
Even if you are having, like, I mean, I have my family. My family's always been there for me. But like, even last year when I didn't have a boyfriend. It was sort of like, when you're like, you feel like you're alone and you don't have anything in your life, it's the hardest. I'm sure there's people that are listening to this that feel that way right now.
Yes.
And I hate being cheesy, but it fucking gets so much better.
It's not cheesy. It's the truth.
Yeah.
And we can't minimize that. And you know what? Anyone that does think it's cheesy, hey, maybe this part of the podcast isn't for you.
Well, I thought it was cheesy when it wasn't happening to me. And I think that's the mentality. When you just don't have it and you don't see it,
you can't see that it's going to get better because you're so down that deep, dark well. It's just blackness everywhere you look. Babe, I know that place.
Yeah.
And even intellectually, your brain says, no, you know it has to get better, but you're like, I really don't know if it can.
Yeah.
I really don't know if it can.
And I know that was a movement with gay people, like telling gay youth that it gets better.
It gets better.
I think it's what everybody needs to hear, that. Because I had such a shitty first half of 2016. And like, good things happened, but it was just kind of like, what? Like, is something going to give where my personal life is going to finally be okay?
Yeah.
But it does. It totally. And if you just keep on remembering that you can get out of shit. Yep. And it'll be over, because it's just so,
And
it's the scariest place to be when you feel completely alone and you're not.
Exactly. And you, but the problem is you feel like you're not going to be any good to anybody. So you isolate yourself more.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, they expect me to be fun, Lori, or fun Kathleen. I know. And I have none of that to give right now. So I'm just going to stay inside and be a hermit and pull myself further into this blackness. But the other thing I want people to remember is, like, it's the strong ones who ask for help. Like, it's so hard to, especially if it's, maybe it's your first time dealing with a depression and you think, well, for heaven's sakes, I should just be able to pull up my bootstraps and I should just be able to think my way out of this. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's brain chemistry. It's a million things together that are not easy to solve. So ask for help. You know what? I go for meds and therapy together as a combo.
Yeah.
And please, like, don't be afraid to ask, because there are people out there who can really make a difference.
And I'm super lucky because I had a couple people reach out to me because they saw.
Mm.
And they totally saved my life.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I'm so glad that you have those people around you.
I'm tired of crying on this podcast.
You know what? This is Kathleen McGee. You know what?
Yeah.
Kathleen McGee, uncensored. And if that means crying, that's part of the reason that you're loved and appreciated. And maybe, you know what you might be doing and you don't even realize it? You're giving someone else permission to do that. And maybe that's exactly what they need right now.
It just, like, yeah. And seriously, even if you don't have depression, if you notice somebody, they're not being themselves.
Yeah.
That's when you reach out. And even if they don't give you, if they tell you to fuck off or they tell you, no, I'm fine, just...
Yeah.
Don't give up on your friends.
No, because the fact that you reached out could have meant a world of difference. Oh, yeah. You might not even ever know about it.
I think I would have killed myself this February if had been for a couple people
that forced me
to stop being a fucking idiot, because you're being stupid.
But you can't even say that, though, because you're in a place where you're not yourself anymore. You don't have good judgment anymore. Yeah. So you like, don't ever say that you were stupid or it seemed stupid, because at that point you were just surviving.
Yeah.
You didn't have all of your good faculties that you have when your mental health is in good condition. So, you know, like, you can't be mean to yourself about it.
Yeah. And I started this at the end of February, and this also saved me this year.
The podcast?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Because I got to be emotional and, like, it just, other people heard it and they messaged me and they said they felt something. And so it does, like, everybody's like, I don't know if I can do your podcast. I don't know if it can be funny. I'm like, if you've not heard my podcast, it's about jokes.
It's not a show. It's you don't have to do a tight 60. Come
it's
on.
About real shit. It's about, I'd rather somebody be extremely real than, like, get upset or something. I don't
even know.
Exactly.
If you want to hear a comedian's comedy, go on YouTube or go watch something else. But if you want to get down to the real nitty gritty, then let's sit here and cry.
I feel like this has been more of a therapy session for me.
Well, it is $180, but you know what? It's Christmas.
We've
done
this before, though. I sat and cried in your car in Calgary once for an hour. Yeah. You cried with me.
And I cried right back.
Cry therapy is good. Is that a
thing? I remember where we were parked. We were like on 13th Avenue downtown. Yeah. I don't know why, but it was like an abandoned house.
Yeah.
We just sat outside there and cried in the car.
Yeah, it helps. Like, I already feel better. And the thing is, like, I bottle stuff up.
Yeah.
That's just what I do.
Yeah.
But I started going to therapy this year. I didn't get a lot of sessions because you can't get free therapy. It's impossible.
It's so sad.
There's no such thing.
I wish the whole world could get free therapy.
Me too. Oh. I wish that the government would fucking take some money and throw it towards mental health.
How much change it would affect in such a good way.
They just stopped funding it years ago. Like, it really is something that is super important.
Yeah.
That the government needs to start funding. Need to start doing that.
Fuck the government. How did it go for you? How did that first session go?
The first session was good. And this was so funny because in February I contacted this thing, and in like October they finally messaged me.
Oh, man.
And they said, well, we had the wrong phone number or something. We were calling the wrong number. I'm like, well, you were calling my mom. You could have just said, we're looking for Kathleen, and she would have given you my phone number.
Anyway,
so I finally went, and I remember walking in because it was at the General Hospital here in Vancouver, and it's a negative term, but it's a loony bin. Like, it's where and I walked in and I'm like, there's fucking crazy people just everywhere here, like, and with way bigger problems with me. I don't need this. What am I doing here? I nearly didn't go.
Oh my God.
But then I'm like, no, I've waited since February.
Yeah. Like, you could, the other perspective would be, well, they're helping these guys. And yeah. these guys are, wow, one flew over the cuckoo's nest. This should be easy for me.
Way wackier. And so she, like, yeah, so I stayed and I met. And she was really lovely. She was a really great therapist. And she's like, it was so funny. She said, oh, he's going to sit in. He's a student. We're a teaching hospital. So he's going to sit and listen. Is that okay? And I'm like, yeah, he's prepared for some shit. And I think he was scared by me because I did let some shit out. And it was so funny because at the end of the session, she goes, do you see the pattern with your depression? And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, everything with your depression, you always get saddest when it comes to a relationship with a man.
And she's like, and was, did that surprise you when she said that?
It didn't surprise me, but I'm like, holy fuck, you're right. Every yeah. time I would have a really bad episode, it was because I met a guy who I thought was good and then wasn't. And it just was like, holy fuck, I just have to stop relying on a dude to make me happy.
Oh God, that's huge.
So it was big. And so I had this big long thing, and I even have a joke out of it now, because she said, she asked me if I ever had panic attacks, and I was like, well, I don't really know the symptoms, so I don't know. And she said, it's like shortness of breath, like increased heart rate, some people cry. And I'm like, my joke is, I didn't say this to her, although I wish I did. I said, well, that happens every time I masturbate. I'm like, are you telling me that I'm having panic attacks, not orgasms?
But like, I feel ripped off right now.
I feel so ripped off. So I got new material out of it, and I talk, and I, even though I just have done one session, I'm trying to find a place with a sliding scale that I can afford.
Good.
But I, even just that one, it really felt good to talk yes. shit out. And that's why this podcast has been like my therapy, because I, people who have listened since the beginning, I'm going to, it's almost a year that I've been doing this. They've heard my sad yeah. updates, where I just like, I have to do the intros and I just like let it out. And it yeah. really, as soon as I start talking about shit, you're so, so surprising how much better it will get once you start talking about shit.
Yeah. It's amazing how much that helps. Yeah. I still do it. Like, I don't see my psychologist on a regular basis anymore. But it's like, when I'm having a situation or a feeling, or feels like the black dog of depression is starting to nip on my heels, yeah. I'll be like, hey, Candace, I need to come in. And I'll go there and go, I don't even know what I need to talk about. But I need to like release the valve or something. Yeah. And it's funny because as a comedian, I feel like I need to go into therapy with like a plan. Like, what am I going to open yeah. with? Yeah. Exactly. I'm going to use the suicide closer this time. It always kills. Yeah, I had to say it. But so stupid. But I realize like she's actually not expecting a show. I just need to get some stuff out. And God, it feels good every time. And every time I walk out of therapy, I think, God, if I could gift the world with therapy all the time, like if people knew that just talking about it, you know what? And it doesn't have to be professional if you don't have the money, but just somebody that you trust that maybe has a modicum of shit together. You can't help but feel better afterwards.
You totally do.
It's like taking a big poop.
It is.
Right?
It's taking a mind poop.
A mind
poop. You're shitting
poop.
Out the shit that's been stuck in there.
Oh.
And I was constipated for so long.
Right? Oh my God. And you know that first one's going to hurt real bad.
It hurts so bad. It tore my brain apart.
It tore it apart. But then it healed, right?
Oh, it healed,
and then
it was so
you started mind
clearer.
Pooping regularly. Yeah. And every now and then you're going to get backed up again.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? You're going to push through it.
Yeah.
You're going to get that poop out.
Yeah.
Same thing.
It's so good. And I think also like with Adam, he's the first person I've ever been with that actually wants to talk about shit.
No.
And he makes me talk. Like it was so funny. We weren't going through it. I was just in a Kathleen mood where Kathleen just gets down on herself because she's not working enough. And so we went swimming and we sat in the hot tub and he said, what's wrong with you? And so we started talking. So I would say, go to a hot tub. They're the best. They just let you spill shit out. Mm-hmm. But I've never dated somebody that wants to know why I'm feeling like this. And I feel
goddamn
the same
beautiful.
Way about, he's a wonderful person. Like there's a reason why because most of my relationships lately have been like a month or two and I get bored or sick, but he doesn't give up on me. So that's kind of awesome.
That is so caring.
Yeah, it's nice.
And so gorgeous.
And I never thought that I would find somebody that was like that. So it's another one of those. If you just Wait, it'll happen.
And I would venture to say that you started to believe that you are worthy of having somebody like that.
It's true. I started definitely thinking, why are you dating these losers that treat you like shit on the first date? That don't even give a fuck about you.
And it comes down to self-love.
Yeah, totally.
It was because you were allowing that to happen. Yeah. And you did not deem yourself worthy of having someone who treated you better at that time.
Yeah.
And now look how far you've progressed, that you have a man who sits down and cares and doesn't give up and wants to know what's in your heart.
Yeah.
And your brain.
It's so nice.
Look how far you've come. It's huge. It's huge. I'm on top of the world for you.
Thank you. And I'm on top of the world for you because you're destroying everything and you look amazing.
No, I'm not destroying
you
everything.
You are. You're doing so good. I love your crafting world. And I think you're so smart to have this because I have started writing more, just not comedy, just writing just shit out. Well, I got to the end of the road. Burning bridges wherever it goes. But I promise you this, I am getting my kicks. So fuck you, this is my bucket list. Well, I got sick of living life. Counting down to get from that fight. So I'm learning new tricks. Well, you all take the piss. And I'm living up my bucket list. And I live in the fast lane wherever I go. And I'll take all those chances before I get old. But I promise you this, I am getting my gift. So fuck you, this is my bucket list. And I'm living up my bucket list. But I promise you this, I am getting my kicks. So fuck you, this is mine.